Hi, welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Now, you already know this. You can pick us up on all your major podcast platforms, but also please check out the new YouTube channel. Subscribe to that because every single episode in the new wonderful studio will also be on YouTube, and the entire back catalogue now has been edited to about 70 hours will start to populate on it. So I don't want you to miss any of that. Well, this episode is all about coaching. What is it? How useful is it? Do we need a coach? And my view is certainly yes. Think about some of the world's best in class, the best tennis players, the best golfers, the top CEOs. Every single one of them will have someone or a team behind them who is still there helping them sometimes do nothing more than making 2 millimeter changes in how to be even more successful, even if you are the best in the game. So come back to me just after this break. We can have an amazing episode where I've got Nick Goldberg and Sinead Keenan from Ezra Coaching, and you know how this works, I've always got to ask someone far wiser than me, tell us everything we need to know about coaching. See you in a moment.
You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, powered by Transform Performance International, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
So it's a big warm. I know it's bizarre, isn't it, when I see you in a moment, but that's edited afterwards. It's a huge welcome to Nick, Sinead. Thank you so much for coming into The Leadership Enigma. How are you?
Great, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, actually. And I've been in the studio for quite some time because we were doing something completely funky and unrelated to the podcast earlier. So I feel this really is a second home. Let's start with some introductions because all I've done is say name. Nick, let's start with you. Just tell everyone who's, I hope, listening and watching, who are you?
Sure, I'm Nick. I'm Nick Goldberg. I'm the founder and proud CEO of Ezra. I've been in the leadership and coaching space my whole career, and great to be with you here today.
It's great to see you, and I'm going to ask you some questions about Ezra in a moment. But Sinead, it's a huge welcome to you as well. Tell us a little bit about you.
Hi, Adam. Lovely to be here today. So my name is Sinead Keenan, and I am Chief Innovation Officer at Ezra and also head of Ezra Labs. So I'm a psychologist, behavioral scientist. I have spent most of my career in consulting, a number of years in-house as a head of learning and talent. And now I lead the Ezra Labs team. And we can talk a little bit about that. But effectively, we are the innovation hub at the heart of Ezra, focused on insights and science and designing the best products and solutions for our customers.
Well, I love the fact that you're here, Sinead, because we can then dig it, you say, into the science behind the lab side. Maybe we're all recovering consultants here as well. I don't know. We're turning into a therapy session, so forgive me for that. Now, let me start with you, because there's a story in relation to how Ezra was started. So tell us a little bit about that.
So I used to be the CEO of a really large leadership development coaching company called LHH. And we provided a number of services to large corporates. We provided kind of group leadership development, assessment, coaching, a number of different things. The thing that had the biggest impact on our clients, the things that we heard most feedback on around how individuals had changed behavior, how they developed, was when they had a coach. But as you mentioned in your opening, coaching is typically only given either to Lionel Messi or to CEOs of major organizations, or certainly at the C-suite. And I remember one day I was sitting there in my office 5-6 years ago thinking, why do we only give the best development to the most senior people? It almost feels unfair. And we set on this pathway 5 or 6 years ago to really think, how can we democratize coaching? How can we make it more scalable, more affordable? And maybe even if we're doing it at scale, how can we actually make it measurable? And we started this business 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, again, the aim was to deliver coaching to to more people. We call it a superpower. We really believe coaching is a superpower. And how can we get that superpower out there to more than just the executive? So that's why we started.
Can I just ask a quick question about the pandemic? Because there was a focus on the democratization of learning as well. How do we, when we were all isolating in some ways, try and still reach people? Was the pandemic a catalyst for growth for you? Did it not change anything for you? What was the impact?
Yeah, huge impact, actually. And actually, a lot of my kind of colleagues or friends have said to me before, oh, did you start this business during the pandemic? But we did start it a couple of years before.
Right.
What happened during the pandemic, though, was people, in fact, because all of Ezra is delivered virtually. So, you know, we believe that people can have incredibly powerful conversations over a Zoom type call or a Teams type call. Prior to the pandemic, that was actually an objection that we would get a lot from our potential customers. Can you really have serious conversations this way? We know during the pandemic, far more serious than coaching.
Case proved.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people proposed, people did, you know, the most serious things on Zoom. And therefore, this became a very easy thing for us to get across during that. So the pandemic accelerated our business dramatically.
Why are you so passionate about coaching?
I think for me, you know, I was fortunate enough at an early age to be a CEO. So in my late 20s, I was the CEO of an organization. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't really know what I was doing. And, you know, I think, you know, imposter syndrome is something that everyone talks about. And mm-hmm. I think that that's something that I certainly had when I did that role. And my organization said to me, I think we should get you a coach who can really help you through this. So at 29, running this organization, I received a coach. And that coach is still my coach today, Gary.
Right. And shout out to Gary.
Yeah, Gary. He's phenomenal. And I always thought, you know, why can't we give this to more people? Like, I know what it's done for me. You know, my coaching sessions even today are part or if not the most valuable sessions. I have a coaching session every other week. They help me massively. And I think that being able to deliver that now to literally thousands of people every week is something that we're incredibly proud of. But it did stem originally not only from the opportunity that more people need it, but from a very personal experience that I've had. And I wanted more people to have that.
Okay. Well, Sinead, let me come to you. Yep. I mean, with your background as well and the education that you've got, why coaching for you? And also then kind of lead into a little bit about what you're doing with the labs. But why? Where's the passion for you in this subject?
Yeah. Yeah, good question, Adam. I think, you know, it's interesting. We, having been a buyer myself previously and engaging now with clients, heads of learning, heads of talent, transformation, time and time again, when we ask people, you know, what is the best thing that's happening in their development, they say it's coaching. And
right.
This sort of transformative effect, it makes people feel positive, successful, they're more likely to change. And I started to think about how can we use coaching beyond the traditional. So as Nick was saying, you know, once upon a time, it was the preserve of executives. And then we saw with the pandemic, and since then, really, that it is organizations see the value of coaching for learning, for talent development, leadership development in a much more holistic way. So I think the opportunity to disrupt what is frankly a fairly traditional market was just really exciting to be able to do that here. And I think the science behind it is really compelling.
Why do you think we were in that place before the pandemic where you're right, only the best of the best? You had to get to a certain level, didn't you, where, oh, now you can have a coach. Why did we think like that? Because now when we talk it out loud, that makes no sense, but that's exactly what we did. What was going on?
I think it's partly commercial, right?
Yep.
So the, you know, if you think historically, platforms like Ezra didn't exist. So you had to meet your business coach. They potentially had to fly in to meet you. You had, you know, it was very expensive, a real luxury investment. And what platforms like Ezra have allowed us to do is really just reduce that price point, make it more affordable, more accessible for people all over the world. And it's that idea of it being, you know, in the flow of your work, in the flow of day to day, rather than this activity that has to be, you know, held separately and really only for senior folks.
Well, that's that democratization element, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of other reasons. So absolutely the commercials. So, you know, the travel time involved. And typically coaches would have to travel. They would meet people in person. They would typically deliver one session in a day, and therefore they had to charge a fortune. And that's why it became incredibly expensive for organizations to provide. I think the other reason is, you know, administratively, for organizations to set up an entire coaching program could literally take 3 months. I mean, it's quite incredible looking back as to how that happened. I mean, it now happens within 5 minutes, but it would take 3 months. And if you were to try and do that for 50, 100, some of our clients use it for thousands of people, it would never, ever work. So I think they were the two things. And then just looking back to when we very first started Ezra, some of the objections we have, which are fascinating, is that there was some element of desire from organizations for it to be exclusive. So I remember talking to a bank about Ezra at the very beginning when we first started. We went off and we validated this. Yep. Is this something you would be interested in? And one very well-known investment bank said to me, we would never buy Ezra. And I said, well, why would you never buy Ezra? They said, well, because coaching is exclusive. Coaching is, it's a real, you know, when we give it to our most senior people, that's something they aspire to. They aspire to get to a level to have a coach.
It's almost like a badge of honor.
Exactly. And of course, you know, that's fair. That's by the way, that organization is now a huge Ezra client, which is four years later. But I can understand that's, again, it's how we grew up. It's how organizations did things. And it was just a way in which that we needed to disrupt the market. So it was actually a crazy idea 5 or 6 years ago. People around me in my organization, actually, our parent organization, would say, this will never work. So I think it's...
And here we are. With it.
Exactly.
Sinead, let me come back to you because I'm really interested about the science part. So tell us a little bit about what's underpinning the coaching methodology that you have, that provenance, the sound provenance that there is. And perhaps also a little bit about the labs too.
Yeah.
But let's start with the science side of things.
Yeah, so I think it's... if you think about today's world, the kinds of challenges, people challenges, let's just start there for a second, that we face, leadership, managerial challenges, people challenges, we have unprecedented complexity, right? We now are moving more towards, you might be familiar with this concept, Adam, of adaptive versus technical challenges and adaptive versus technical leadership.
Yep.
So to just define it briefly, adaptive challenges are those complex challenges where there isn't a clear, even the problem itself is hard to define. It's not clear who's responsible for solving it. There's some learning that has to happen to sort of solve it. And usually you have to bring hearts and minds, bring people with you, versus a technical solution, a technical challenge, which really just requires, you know, more of a practical, skill-based solution. But today's world, if you think about it, we've got, you know, managing a hybrid workforce, managing a DEI agenda, downsizing, reductions in force, and growing your business at the same time. These are really adaptive, complex challenges. And what coaching allows you to do is to gives you the space to solve some of those things, to manage those tensions, those leadership tensions or paradoxes. So you might, as a leader, have to, at the same time, deliver on your mandate, your agenda, whilst developing people. You've got to innovate whilst executing. You've got to strategize whilst making things happen. All of those really tricky leadership paradoxes or demands. And what we see in coaching is you have a couple of things that makes it really, really, I think, the right kind of solution for these sort of adaptive, tricky challenges. It's personalized, so it's rather than generic workshops, training you might go through that just don't feel like they apply to me personally. So it's personalized. It gets into the weeds with me on my individual challenge. It is focused. So when you're meeting with your coach, you know they're going to like look into the whites of your eyes. They're going to be talking to you, Adam, very specifically about what it is you're dealing with.
Yeah.
There's no space for you to be, if you were on a sort of group webinar or something where, frankly, you're probably emailing on the side or maybe you're doing your yoga in your bedroom, whatever it might
perish
be.
Perish the thought.
This is, you know, one-to-one.
Yeah.
There's no hiding. So we're going to get right into it. And that sets up...
an accountability piece there, isn't
it? Exactly what I was going to say, yeah. That sets up personal accountability. So you've got personal accountability rather than group accountability, which tends to be sort of more diffused. And within that, then, we see... So the science behind that really is that if I feel accountable to my coach, I am much more likely to do it. So if I think I'm going to be meeting with Adam next week and he's going to be checking in with me around, have I actually tried this new thing that we discussed? Have I experimented in my one-to-ones with this? Have I set this out with my team in a different way? I want to be able to report back to you. You're going to kind of hold my feet to the fire in a really kind way, but you are going to make sure that I'm actually delivering on what I promised, one-to-one. And that's really key to behavior change. And we can talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But just
we see that, don't we, sometimes in programs where Sinead, you and I could be delegates on a program and be accountability partners to each other, not to judge, but to actually say, hey, have you done that thing, Sinead, that you said you were going to do? And that in turn has a positive impact, doesn't it? Just that loose accountability.
Yeah, exactly that. So I think accountability is a big part of it. You know, if you sort of zoom out for a moment and you're asking about the science of why coaching is so effective.
Yep.
We've done a lot of research around the sort of the behavioral science that underpins it. And what we know, and it's, you know, it's very clear, it's very compelling, all of the research is there on what it takes to drive human behavior, to change behavior. And effectively it comes down to sort of three things.
Right.
So you've got motivation. You need to want to do it. You need to want to make that change. You need to see that it's in your best interest. You've got capability. So you need to know what to do, how to do it. And then you've got this interesting thing called a prompt or a
nudge. I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So that's going to be something in my environment cues me or prompts me to enact that behavior, or at least doesn't get in the way. So the environment is facilitating me in some way.
So I saw that in some literature. There's that capability plus the motivation plus the prompts or the nudge. I want to come back to something you said, and Nick, I'll ask you. The depth and breadth of problems that leaders now face is unbelievable. And we're constantly working in the VUCA environment, that volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous. So Nick, is it fair for me to say, as the CEO of the organization, there is no way that you as the CEO can be across all of these issues? You cannot be expert in them. You cannot have a line of sight to all of them. That actually you have to have the trust, empowerment, autonomy of the people in your organization to be across them. Is that a fair comment?
Absolutely. And here's a great example next to me. You know, there are people that if we're going to continue the growth that we've had, it's fairly cliche, but the people are the most important. And I think, you know, at Ezra, we have a very strong culture, and one of the things that we're very proud of is a real culture of empowerment. So, you know, we hire fantastic people not to give them a list of instructions on a Monday and tell them to go away and make that happen. We hire very smart people who come into an organization. We might give them a challenge and say, how can you go and solve this challenge? And I think that has obviously helps grow those individuals, but it helps grow those people. But in order to do that, you have to hire people on the basis that you fully trust them from the day that they start. And we do that at Ezra. We have a really strong culture around, you know, building a really strong psychological safety and all things like that.
You're also big on the environment, aren't you? Because, you know, we talk about immersive and experiential learning. Well, there is an element of immersion when we go into a workplace. And I kind of got the view when I came to see you that you've been quite deliberate about that.
Yeah.
Have you?
Very.
Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, and it's interesting timing of this podcast. We move in on Tuesday to our brand new offices. And, you know, we have offices now, you know, in four or five different countries. And we are quite deliberate, you know. You know, I was watching something the other day. You know, it's about the way that people experience things, the way that people feel. And, you know, in our offices, not only do you have to have breakfast and in today's world, you know, almond milk and everything that employees want, but you also have to have the people there. You have to have a very intentional way of bringing people together. And, you know, this is a very hot topic all over the world, in every, you know, I travel and I speak to chief HR officers.
Yeah.
And actually, the thing that they want to talk about most is how to bring people back in, how to create that flexibility.
$60 million question right now.
And I think, you know, what we're learning through through the work that we're doing is, so long as it's intentional, so long as there is a reason and a value to bringing people together, then you can get people to come in and want to come in. You know, there's no...
Beyond the emails and meetings.
Yeah, there's no way you're going to win this battle by forcing people, by saying you have to. You have to make people want to. And I think that that is something that we're working incredibly hard at Ezra. It didn't start off very easily. I think we're now on a journey and we're certainly getting closer. The environment helps. The environment is an enabler. You know, having these benefits, but also having, you know, open space, having, you know, good areas for meetings, having whiteboards and blackboards. And, you know, we've actually set up in our new office, it's interesting, we've set up an area which is like working from home from the office.
Right.
So people like working from home, so they can, you know, part of it is it's more comfortable. They get to, you know, we've got a roof terrace. They can go outside and get some fresh air. They don't have to sit at a desk. They can sit on the sofa. So we've actually set up an area in the office that gives that same feel, but that also means that you can then go and talk to a colleague and ask them a question without having to set up a Zoom call. So we're really trying to be very intentional about understanding, like any good consultant business person would, what is the need of your customer, what is the need of our employees, and set up our office in a way that fits that need. So
I love that. I had Adrian Simpson come in, I was probably a couple of months ago actually, as a guest, and he talked about the need now for offices to really be places where you connect, you educate, and you celebrate. And I love that, because it wasn't about an office where you come to work and to do your emails and your meetings, important, yes, but people can do that at home.
Yeah,
coming in to connect, to celebrate and educate, which I thought was
absolutely
kind of a lovely
approach. And one thing I fear, a trap, and by the way, we fell into this trap, and you know, a story about 6 weeks ago. So we had a loose recommendation of, you know, come in for 2 to 3 days a week.
Right.
And what I saw happening was, is that if someone didn't come in for that third day, they may come in on a day like a Friday when no one else is there, but they just felt like I had to make up the day.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, it's no value. You didn't need to come in. There's no the idea is we're all together. So I think that it's harder to do this because obviously the quid pro quo is it creates arguably less flexibility. But by having intentional days where everyone comes together, that's the point. That the point is collaboration, celebration, creativity, and that only happens really when we're together. So in our new, as we move into this bigger space, that's what we're doing. So we're much more intentional about the time that we are together.
So that human proximity piece is something we really lost during the pandemic and something I struggled with on a personal level. It's how the podcast was started, because I panicked and thought, how do I do what you normally do and stay valuable or create value and meet people? When we talk about human proximity, Sinead, let me come back to you. That's a big piece of coaching, isn't it? Human proximity, chemistry, connection. So tell me a little bit about that and that importance to the coaching itself.
Yeah. Well, so a couple of thoughts. I think what we know actually is that people learn best when they feel successful,
okay,
rather than from failure. So there's been a lot of, I think, quite, you know, fashionable trends around fail fast, and particularly within tech and startups. And there is merit in that. But more recent research has shown quite convincingly that actually we do learn best when we have some sort of success. And that's because it's less of a threat to us in some way. We can replicate, try that out again. Okay. And what coaches do so well, to your point, is to help you to build that sort of success mindset, help you to find where your wins are, really making those more visible. The other thing that coaches will do very well. Well, let me ask you a question, Adam. Let's see if you know the answer to this.
Oh, no. This could go wrong.
This could go terribly wrong. You weren't expecting
this. We can edit this bit out. It's fine.
No. So a question that I always love to ask groups when we talk about the science behind coaching and is, you know, think about your last great day at work. Today, not being one of those, but, you know, think about your last great day at work. What happened? What made it such a great day for you?
I think I go straight to perhaps a bit of a bias, which is when I'm in front of a live audience.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I had yesterday the privilege of working with 200 people online,
yep.
which I always think is a real challenge mm-hmm. when it's one versus many. But we had such a rich conversation. Do you know what? I'm going to share this. I got some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit high energy. It's just the way I'm wired. And I did a live event, and I think I may have scared the introvert slightly. And so I got very nice feedback. But when we did the 200, I thought to myself quite deliberately, how do we really get the introverts and extroverts in there? And we made a simple change. We just said, everyone, please put some thoughts into the chat box so we can get all voices in, mm-hmm. because there's a real power to mm-hmm. that. And it was something I'd never done before. I just said, just put a why mm-hmm. after your answer or an end after your answer to let me know whether I should call on you and you could speak mm-hmm. to the wider group. We had such a rich conversation where we felt we were getting so much from everyone that I felt pretty proud about that. But you know what? It's thanks to the feedback, in some ways, the coaching, and I've been doing this for a long time, where I thought, okay, let's make a little 2 millimeter change.
Yep.
And we suddenly had 200 people really active, but in their own way, and perhaps in a safe space. And the data that was coming out was extraordinary. And I felt pretty good about mm. that.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, I felt there was a connection piece, mm-hmm. which I think is probably what you're talking about from a coaching point
yeah.
of view.
Yeah.
Have
yeah.
I answered that question, or I just rambled?
No, I love that example. It's. I think that's a really nice demonstration of, you know, feeling successful, being able to demonstrate a small change that has quite a big
yeah.
impact. And interestingly, when you ask this question, people, they often talk about being recognized, you know, achieving something that was difficult. But actually, the thing that has been found to be the single most common reason why we experience a great day at work, and the opposite is true, by the way, is a sense of progress.
Right.
So having a sense of progress, which is called the progress principle. It's a quite a well-known study. And just... I've always thought that is such a compelling, interesting insight that if we could apply it in our day-to-day and with our teams, you know, you don't have to be a coach. If you're a manager, helping people to see some level of progress is so motivating. And often we don't always see it ourselves, but being able to help somebody really map that out. So those are sort of two things, I think, in terms of the human proximity. But one thing I wanted to just challenge us on a little bit,
yep.
and it's a little bit counterintuitive maybe. We talk a lot about, the coaching industry talks a lot about chemistry and the importance of chemistry. And I think it's time that we revisit that question, actually. And some quite recent research on this topic, but you know, across many studies, big meta-analysis,
yeah.
is showing that chemistry actually doesn't make that big of a difference in terms of the effectiveness of coaching.
Tell me more.
The impact of coaching. So it's pretty... recent these findings, but it's what we're seeing is that actually it's the working alliance that's what makes the difference. So how effectively we work together is how I help to create trust, how I help to challenge you, how I help you to think about your goals. That is much more important than whether we have a spark,
okay.
whether we have chemistry. And actually the sort of the downside is that with chemistry we can choose others who are like us. So similarity bias kicks in.
Almost like an echo chamber.
Right, exactly. And that doesn't allow us to see, that we don't really see the true mirror,
okay.
Which I thought was really interesting. It also makes you think about the amount of time that leaders and execs spend in chemistry meetings with coaches, that actually we're seeing really, you know, they don't need to do that. That time could be well spent on other things.
Yes.
And actually, typically, we don't see people switch their coaches very often because it's the chemistry doesn't matter that much. It's
the working alliance
mm. that makes the difference.
I love that. I want to come back to something you said as well. I'm loving this conversation, by the way, folks. You talked about the ability to talk about success and progress.
Yeah.
And maybe that's an easier emotional anchor for all of us, a time when we were successful
yes.
in something and leverage it. So is it the role of the coach to find that balance between the positive, but also the times where mm. it's gone horrible, spectacularly mm. wrong? Because there's still great learning from that, but it's a perhaps more difficult place to go. So is that one of the challenges for a coach, to try and balance those two? How does one do that?
Yeah, I think you know, another clear thing that comes out in the science around coaching is the ability of a coach to surface limiting beliefs. So
I definitely want to come on to limiting beliefs.
Limiting beliefs, which are those assumptions, ideas we hold about ourselves that in some way might hold us back, right? And so a coach can help you to really bring those out. So let's take an example.
And we've all got these, right?
We've all got these. And a coach will use that great sort of Socratic questioning, just asking you lots and lots of questions until you get to that great moment of self-insight,
yes.
which is that, oh, I do this. And we know that when we have that self-insight, we have, a new kind of pathways that our brains will connect. And it's such powerful. Is that true when people say, aha, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it is that moment of a bit of an illumination. So I've always been doing whatever it is my whole career. I'll give you a couple of examples.
Yeah.
Vulnerability. So a lot of leaders, I think, feel that they can't show vulnerability.
Why?
That it's because leadership is about strength. It's about being the expert, about having competence, knowing all the answers. But we know that if you can show vulnerability, it's transformative. You know, people suddenly feel that they can open up. You must see this with your teams as well.
On a human level.
Yeah, because you've opened up. You've shown some sort of disclosure. You've shown some, these are my areas where I'm struggling. And that creates a safety, the psychological safety for others to do the same. And that's really where you start to learn, when you can make others feel that it's safe to be able to be vulnerable. So I think that's a nice example.
I had two CEOs during the pandemic of big businesses mm-hmm. who independently, and it was a phrase that I've quoted before because I'd not heard it before, but they both used it and they didn't know each other. And they said, it's time to take the mask off.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was because they had a deeply personal experience, as everyone has, during the pandemic, mm-hmm. good, bad, or indifferent. And I think that was highlighting to me the importance of things such as vulnerability and the work that I'm doing. I'm passionate about human-centered mm-hmm. leadership, which is also something I want to come back to. In fact, can I do that now? Because you also talked about adaptive leadership and mm-hmm. technical leadership, and I'll bring you both into this conversation. I had Nick Jankel, who's a futurist, he's a fabulous speaker, he's come in a couple of times, and he talked about complicated and complex. Mm-hmm. And you've used these terms, Sinead. He said that a plane or an engine is complicated, but an organization full of human beings is complex. Are you finding as well now in your own experiences and the work that you do and the clients you see, that the more senior you become, the more you are required to be the adaptive leader and the human leader and rely less and less on your technical expertise or the things that you might have been known for or promoted for as yeah. best in class, that actually people are not looking for that as much anymore. It's the adaptive and the human side. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I mean, we see that all the time. If I think about all the one-to-ones I have with my team,
yep.
so my direct reports over the last month, you know, 75% of the conversation is around the challenges they're having with their teams, with the structures, with the human side of their teams, you
yep.
know, the personal challenges that their teams have, and less so. And sometimes, you know, you want to actually go back, call it to business, but business is about their teams,
yes.
Less so about the technical side of what they do. And I think it is a huge challenge for them. And I want to bring this just back to coaching for one second, because, you know, at Ezra, one thing you're probably not surprised to hear is every single employee has a coach, an
right.
Ezra coach.
I was going to ask.
And I think that one thing we see the value from
mm-hmm.
is we do have a very vulnerable organization. People feel very comfortable within it, but I think that partly comes from when you have a coach. You know, the coach, arguably through the Socratic questioning and through their techniques, is encouraging you to be vulnerable. So you get yourself into that mindset and you believe that it's okay. And I think that carries through into the rest of our company. So I think that, you know, certainly we are in a world where, and especially, you know, that there's an expectation as well to be human from employees. You know, they want to see the human side. So I think that it's definitely happening. I see it every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the organizations I speak to every day, that's what they're looking for in their leaders. But there are still leaders out there who lead with strength, or call it, that's maybe not that. I mean, they lead with strength, but they can be vulnerable. But they still fear being vulnerable. We do see that. We definitely see that.
Let me ask you a personal question. Has your style of leadership as a CEO changed pre to post pandemic from the experiences that you've been through? you think it's changed?
Honestly, I don't know. I think that I have
Sinead.
No, because I think before the pandemic, I don't think the pandemic shifted my leadership style. I think I've always been quite an open and vulnerable leader, and you know, some people call it kind of servant leadership, you know, where I've always kind of put the business ahead and so on. I think what the pandemic did is maybe made me appreciate people's personal circumstances more than I ever had done before. You know, during
make time for it.
Yeah, and make time for it. You know, it highlighted, you know, you physically saw people's, you know, kids in the background. You physically saw their moving house with boxes in the background. You saw some of the challenges that they were going through during that time, you know, with staying inside or not being able to see their grandparents. You know, there were things that we discussed during those Zoom calls, during those 2 years, that we would never have discussed before. So I don't think my style changed, but I think that my understanding of people's personal circumstance changed. And that probably has led post-pandemic to a far more comfortable conversation around deeper, more personal things with your teams than you ever had done before.
We've moved away, haven't we? We passed from people in the corridor going, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine. How are you? Yeah, I'm good. And actually, there was now a sense of really meaning it. I want to come back, Sinead, because it's interesting, if we're focusing on the adaptive and the human more than the technical, when we talk about, and I love what you said about not, it's not the chemistry, it's this working alliance. I love that. When people connect with coaches, are they now looking for people they can have a working alliance with on a human level, or are they saying, I'm a banker, therefore I need a banker as a coach, or I'm in healthcare and I need a healthcare as a coach? Is there less of that now and more of the human working alliance? What are you seeing in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually. I think there is greater recognition of the learning that you can gain from a, you know, executive coach who has likely got a senior corporate experience,
yes,
but in a different industry, who can help you to see things differently.
The outside in.
Bring in different perspectives. So I don't think there is the same dependency on you need to have the domain expertise. You need to have, you know, knowledge of my banking industry to be credible. I think there is much more sophistication actually in our, right, you know, the clients and organizations we work with.
Okay. Yeah, and I think if you even think about sports coaches, right, I've always thought this, you know, Tiger Woods' coach is not as good at golf as Tiger Woods, has never been. But what their coach does, and it's the same with an executive coach in business, is they help you realize that actually, most likely you have the answers to your fears or your questions in your own head, and they are professional question askers. If you think about Socratic questioning that Sinead was talking through. So I think that's slightly shifted, and I think the organizations are understanding that, and that has shifted this request, which we used to get, I'm talking 6, 7, 8 years ago, from our clients, would say, you know, particularly in professional services, we have to have a coach that's been a lawyer or that's been a banker, etc., to we have to have a coach that will help my lawyers or bankers understand how they can be best at work. And that is a skill. That is what the best coaches in the world have. And you know, Sinead has, through the work that she's done and some of the teachings she's taught me, you know, you physically when you're forced to think of the answer yourself, you neurologically rewire something in your brain, and then you're far more likely to go and do it than when someone literally says, go and do that. Then you might do it tomorrow, but you won't do it next week. And I think that's what coaches do.
It's good to hear. I had the privilege of working with the Johns Hopkins hospital team, and they had the teach, don't tell philosophy, where they were pushing accountability and responsibility to the most junior end of the patient spectrum, and through Socratic or humble inquiry, asking smart questions, which got the junior person, if it's, you know, not a high stakes situation, to actually ask those questions so they land on the answer themselves. And that power of teach, don't tell had huge impact on that particular institution.
Just one other thing here. You know, my coaching sessions are hard. They're not. Whilst they're incredibly valuable, sometimes they are really difficult hour sessions. And my coach will ask me a question, and I'll even say, I can't believe you've asked me that. Like, that's really difficult. And then he won't say anything. You know. There's a natural inclination at that point
to fill the gap.
My coach will say, no. You know, he won't say anything, and then I have to answer the question. And in doing that, I'm coming to the conclusions or coming to the learnings myself. And I think that, again, the best coaches in the world are great at doing that. And I think, you know, hopefully within Ezra now, people have learned to be coaches themselves through having coaching. We create a coaching culture. And when Sinead is leading her team, you know, I'm sure that Sinead is leading in that way as well.
So you're both passionate about coaching, that's obvious. But how do we know that it's working? So from an individual level, how do I know that I'm getting what I need, or I'm making progress, I'm getting traction? How do we do that?
It's a great question. We've done a lot of work on that.
Yeah. So I think what we sometimes take for granted, actually, a client said this was recently, a big tech client out in the west coast of the US. And we were talking about some new products that we're innovating around at the moment. And, you know, she said to us, I think you guys don't appreciate how effective it is for you to have this behavioral assessment. And we can talk about what that is in a moment, which allows you to track your change over time, self, peer, manager, so 180, 360, to get that full picture of change.
Right.
And we were talking about it in the context of how we could use this for more of a learning sort of intervention, one-to-one learning intervention. And she was saying, you know, we rarely see that, actually. We rarely see the same level of impact and insight on sort of learning interventions. And it just made me think about, yes, it's actually a really powerful tool. So the way we think about whether it's working, Adam, and it's the right question to ask is, so there's individual change, right? So if you think about those levels of evaluation, you've got at the most basic level, you know, am I enjoying the experience? Am I engaged, et cetera, et cetera?
Right.
And then we measure what knowledge, what skills are you acquiring? What behaviors are you seeing shift? So we do a pre-assessment and a post-assessment,
right,
a behavioral assessment. And that allows you all through the app, and it's very intuitive, it doesn't take very long, but it allows you to sort of rate yourself at the beginning, rate yourself at the end, have your manager to do the same, your peers, etc. And then we also look, so we know that it's not just about the individual. When we're talking to our clients, big customers, we're saying, what are you trying to achieve at an organizational level? So when you aggregate all of that, what are we trying to do? So we're trying to, let's say, we're trying to shift engagement scores. We're trying we've got a real issue with retention, productivity, promotion rates aren't happening the way they should be. So we will work with the organization at the beginning and say, what are those key metrics that you're going after? What does that translate into in terms of goals or competencies that we want to coach around? So you're kind of aligning organizational direction, strategic direction, with individual desires and motivation. And we help to kind of meet at the confluence of the two and say, that's where we're really going to focus this coaching program. And then we will track with the the client partners, what shifts do we see over time? So right. We've seen, you know, productivity has gone up 18% with one of our big global banking clients. We've seen that retention rates have gone up with another FMCG client. So it's looking at what's happening at that level, but also for the individual to be able to play back, I am seeing this change over time. And that happens consistently across the goals that they select.
Yeah, and with that bank, it's interesting, yep. You know, they gave Ezra to 500 call center managers, and they didn't give it to another 500. And a year later...
Compare and contrast.
Exactly, a year later, they looked at, they call it a productivity metric. Another way of describing it, having looked deeper, is, you know, how were customer queries dealt with, how many new accounts were opened, how many mortgages were opened as a result of the calls that they had.
Yeah.
And as Sinead said, the ones that had Ezra had an 18% higher rating within their team than the ones that didn't. So, you know, not only is it developing behavior through the measurements that we do, but we see it having a massive impact on business results.
And it's trying to work out, isn't it, with clients, what does success look like?
And
almost reverse engineering it. And we talk about success on the individual level and on the organizational level. And that's important, isn't it? How do people get in touch? How do people continue the conversation with you, learn more? What's the best way?
So we have our website, helloezra.com. I think that we have inquiry forms on there. That's the best way to get in touch. I think I actually haven't thought about the answer for that one.
LinkedIn, does that work too?
How do people get in touch? So follow us on LinkedIn.
Yep.
Visit our website, helloezra.com. Follow us individually on LinkedIn, and of course, message us for any inquiries.
You know, we're not editing that bit now, Nick, so people are going to think you're doing kind of X Factor. We're leaving that in, James, just so we know. Sinead, any other details or any kind of final thoughts? I want to leave final thoughts with you. And I want to link it to, is it the behaviours where the rubber is really meeting the road in coaching, that it's translating the conversations, the connection, the alliance is translating into tangible behaviours back in the workplace? Is that what this is all about?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are squarely in the space of performance, you know, organisational change, professional development. We're not in the therapy business, but it is really about what are those behaviours day to day at work. My team, the Ezra Labs team, we're very focused on what are the trends that we're seeing, how can we bring the latest thinking in behavioural science and psychology to apply that to our solutions to ensure that we're more likely to see that change in behaviour over time. So yes, I think that is the future.
Here's my final question. Where do you think we're going with coaching next? If things have changed dramatically, maybe the pandemic had something to do with that, what's next for coaching?
Yeah, I think for me, what we've seen, not just with coaching, but this power of one-to-one.
Yep.
So the power of one-to-one is more effective than any other kind of learning intervention. And where we're going and the challenge that we have at Ezra is how do we scale that even more?
Okay.
How do the most junior people in organizations receive that same level of personalization that previously the most senior were? And I think that for me is where we're going in the future is how do you scale it even further, because it does have the biggest impact and it is people's preference.
That's the challenge and the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Sinead, what do you think?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think something that we're going to be launching shortly is a solution, a product, which is bolstering the coaching, so the human element, the one-to-one, but with what we talked about at the beginning, those prompts or nudges that come in between your coaching sessions that are grounded in that behavioral science framework of capability and motivation and helping you to spot opportunities. And what we're seeing in our early projects on this pilots is that people are so engaged with that, much more than we even expected, with those nudges that they get, getting to talk to their coach about it. Blending that together allows us to do more of a slightly more structured learning journeys for a much wider, deeper part of the organization. So I think that's really exciting as well.
Well, I shall watch with interest. Look, it's a massive thank you for taking the time to come into the new and wonderful Leadership Enigma studio. I hope you've enjoyed this.
We have.
Hasn't felt too much like therapy.
It's been great. It's been fantastic.
But listen, it's great to talk to you. And genuinely, you know, it's all about people, isn't it? And so I think we're all passionate about that. And carry on the good work. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
Cheers.
Very much.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or visit the dedicated website, www.leadersenigma.com, powered by Transform Performance International, where you can access our exclusive learning, including books, videos, bonus content, assessments, and more. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.